Hello and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason, and with me, as usual, is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's going on?
It's the abbreviated NBA offseason. Lots of things happening all at one time in terms of the draft and the trade deadline, and or not the trade deadline, but the offseason, free agency and trades and crazy stuff. So, I think one really notable thing that happened was a reported trade. The Milwaukee Bucks were set to acquire Bogdan Bogdanovic, in a kind of a bid to bolster, their possible last season with Giannis. And so that kind of made us think of like some other, big trades that were, either publicly reported at the time or, were kind of in the works and very nearly happened. And kind of just digging into some details there. And there's some surprising ones as you go through them.
Yeah, there really is. And we ask people on Twitter, on Facebook, and in different places, like, hey, what are some of your favorite ones that you remember, big trades that fell through? And there's going to be some of the common ones that everybody brings up every single time. We are going to talk about those ones. But there were some really cool ones, too, that either I had no idea about ever, or ones that I maybe remembered a little bit but forgot about and didn't know as much of, like, kind of the intricate details of. So yeah, I'm really excited to do the show. It's gonna be a fun one here of some, yeah, some obvious ones that I think people know, the Chris Paul to the Lakers, the Iverson to the Pistons ones, but then some weird ones that I think, yeah, even I learned a ton about and really had never even heard about ever. So yeah, I'm really excited to dive into here.
The first one is an oldie but a goodie. Bob McAdoo to the Sonics in December 1976. I mean, this reached the point where it was reported in the newspaper. There were newspaper articles that in Seattle that McAdoo was going there. They thought it was going to happen, and then it kind of fell through at the end. But I mean, that would have been a huge get for the Sonics. McAdoo had been the MVP in 75, and then would and then at 76 had been the runner up. For the Braves, they were sort of an up and coming team in the mid 70s. They had Randy Smith, Jim McMillan, Ernie DiGregorio, and they were coached by Jack Ramsey. And they had taken the Celtics six games in the Eastern Conference Finals in the 76 season. So, they seemed like they were headed for big things, but they also had had some financial and chemistry rose. They were kind of in the midst of an ownership change to John Y. Browne, who was the former Colonels owner. McAdoo had been accused by the team of faking a back injury, and it had been suspended for a few games. Jack Ramsey left the team in the offseason in 76. So, and McAdoo was expected to leave as free agent, so they needed to kind of get something for him. And I think this trade was better than anything that what they ended up getting, later on with the Knicks.
Yeah, it's still not great. I don't love it, but it yeah, I agree. When compared with the two deals, I think this one definitely has a little bit more to it. But yeah, not the top value, not really the value you'd assume about McAdoo would get at that time. But like you said, there were some issues going on, and I think you mentioned it as well, where he's suspended in 1975. They accused him of faking a back injury and just some other like kind of dumb stuff that made people probably think, oh, Bob McAdoo, I don't know, are we supposed to, And it's like, God, he's really still a very, very good player. And yeah, this deal and then the actual one that happened, I think were probably low values for Bob McAdoo at the time. But this one's not bad. This one's okay.
Well, like the two key pieces that came from Seattle was Tom Burleson, who was 7'4", and he was only 23, and he'd average, 15 points per game, 9 rebounds per game, almost 2 blocks per game. He'd really been improving, the last few years. So like he was someone who you could talk yourself into, okay, he's a prospect. And he ended up not panning out. Injuries happened, but like he seemed like a guy who was pretty good value, who might return, who might get better and might end up being like a perennial all-star at least. And then Leonard Gray was 24. Had a good season with Seattle. 14 points per game, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. Was solid stats, but ended up just kind of flaming out. Basically his next season was his last season, and he was out of the league. I'm not even clear on why. I looked it up and couldn't really figure out anything there. Burleson, at least, he's 7'4" guy, was a wiry frame, suffered some injuries short in his career, but so it looked better on paper than it would have turned out. But Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but you're right. Not value for a guy who was still, one of the leading scorers in the league. One of the, was a top five player at that point, at least top 10 player. At that point, the going to the Knicks didn't do a whole lot for his reputation. But he actually,
No.
played pretty. But he actually played pretty well there. He was still a top five scorer. The Knicks just like they weren't terrible. They were just sort of like middling. And compared to the previous team that had come before them, that just, the beautiful game team, all the iconic personalities, the two championships there, they were, seen as like a high price disappointment and a bunch of guys who were selfish, which, was kind of partly true and partly not true. But yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because, that was the last year of the Sonics under Bill Russell, who was the coach and the GM. They made the playoffs the last couple years. They actually, he had a sort of a feud with Spencer Haywood, who was a big superstar. But even after trading him, they still were a playoff team. They had Slick Watson, Fred Brown. They were okay. Obviously, getting McAdoo would have had a lot of upside, and maybe it would have turned them into a potential contender out west. But they end up not doing that. They kind of fall a little bit. Russell's out of there, and then suddenly, they get the regime change. Lenny Wilkins comes in to be the GM and eventually the coach, and then all the stuff that happens to get Jack Sigma, Paul Silas, Marvin Webster, Gus Williams, and John Johnson probably doesn't happen there. So, it may getting in McAdoo, obviously would have been like getting a huge talent in, but they probably don't make the moves that end up, leading to them going to the finals in 78 and getting the title in 79.
Right. It's one of those weird sort of, and there's going to be a bunch of those as we talk about these trades, a weird one. And this is one where it's like, yeah, none of the players that we talked about really like played a part or that big of a part in them becoming, the championship team and going to those finals. But it does sort of, it makes you wonder, okay, well, if they get McAdoo and maybe Russell stays, and then maybe you don't get the regime change over to Lenny Wilkins, and how important was that? And maybe they just are a team that wins like, 39 to 40 games a year or whatever. And then do you make giant sweeping changes and bring in those guys and draft guy, it's one of those things where, when you think about trades, you look at, yeah, okay. Or trades that fell through, like, yeah, okay, these players didn't get traded, so they stayed on this team, so what did they do? But you also have to think of the ripple effects too of the difference of being a bad team versus being a middling team, or like an okay team versus a good, like that does change your future and how you kind of go about that future. So yeah, it's hard to envision them making all the moves that they did to get to where they got to by the end of the decade if they had gotten McAdoo, but you never know exactly, so it's kind of all
Right.
hypotheticals.
Well, especially that quickly. I mean, yeah, I mean, they there was a very specific, sequence of events that's hard to imagine replicating. Again, if they, because basically, they make that trade. They have McAdoo, they have Slick Watts, they have Fred Brown. They have Dennis Johnson, who's was a rookie. Obviously, was going to emerge, but maybe he would have gotten some more room. So that that might have been a 45-50 win team.
Yeah, oh sure.
They still would have been good, but it's hard to imagine them being, a championship contender under those circumstances. But yeah, as you mentioned, McAdoo ends up going to the Knicks just for John Gianelli and cash, which, again, was definitely less value of the cash, I'm sure, was handy for them. And as we said, yeah, I mean, he has, I think 2.5 years with the Knicks. They're okay, but not great. Then he kind of bounces around just like a half a season with the Celtics and sort of feuds with coach and management there. They didn't want him. The owner, who by then was John Mike Brown, actually made the trade for McAdoo without like consulting Red Auerbach, which, is kind of important to consult your
To
GM.
ask Red Auerbach, what to do.
Like, hey,
Not
should
like,
we bring him in?
not necessarily like a guy with any sort of power in the Boston Celtics organization at all. So yeah, no,
Sure.
just definitely go over his head. That shouldn't cause any issues.
Yeah, and then he goes goes to the Pistons for some picks, and they kind of meets a team in turmoil. Bob Lanier wants out. He deals with injuries and some feuding with management. And there's it ended up kind of being a situation where like the Pistons were tanking and didn't want him back at the end of the season, and or maybe he didn't want to come back and depress his contract value. So there's all the, kind of frustration there. And then, he has a bit of a stint with the Nets, and it's basically pariah before he revives his career with the Lakers as a bench scorer. But I don't know. Maybe, maybe Seattle's a more stable situation for him, a winning situation, and he has a better, second half of his career. And that's a possibility too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I could definitely see that. I definitely see the trade. Maybe it doesn't help, the Sonics become a title team, but I think it absolutely helps Bob McAdoo's career. But it's hard to say because you don't know. But yeah, the Knicks was not a stable place to be at that time. The Celtics, when he goes there, he's still trying to kind of fit in that. And you definitely can see, Seattle probably being a better landing spot for him. But yeah, it's impossible to say for sure.
Sure, of course, yes. What do we got next?
Next, we have Dennis Rodman to the Suns. Yes, a little known Dennis Rodman to the Suns trade here. September 1993. I wrote here, not often something involving Dennis Rodman gets held up because of another player's substance issues, but it does happen here as the Pistons are set to trade Dennis Rodman, who is at that time still the NBA's leading rebounder. Last 2 years, I had been leading rebounder, but they are kind of done with the whole Dennis Rodman thing. They're ready to send him to the Phoenix Suns. But they backed off when they learned that a key piece of the trade, Richard Dumas, who was really the Suns' breakout player, I'd say, in 1993. Yes, you get Charles Barkley. Yeah, you add Charles Barkley to a super talented roster. But, man, look at what Richard Dumas did that year. I mean, he comes out of the gates and immediately, I think it's, I don't know if it's technically his rookie year or how that technically works, given that, his suspensions, because he got suspended in 1991 or whatever. But, you look at his scoring. Yeah, it's really good scoring across the board, really good in the playoffs, just like a steady guy, like the second or third option on offense. So, yeah, it's obviously Charles Barkley that turns around that franchise, but I don't think they make it as far as they do. I don't think they're as good as they are in 93 without Dumas. But yeah, so he's a key player in the trade that the Pistons are hoping to acquire, but then they find out that he is in an aftercare program for substance abuse, pretty famously John Lucas's aftercare program. And Lucas, somebody who dealt with those issues through many, many years of his life, has opened this, for professional athletes who are kind of going through substance abuse issues, looking to kind of move on and hopefully better their lives and their careers. And Dumas is in there. So the Pistons say, actually, we don't really want to do this trade anymore. But there's some interesting stuff that goes around it as well. As I mentioned, Dumas, he had previously served 1 year suspension for violating the league's substance abuse policy. And that's going to be a constant in Dumas' career, other than that 1993 season, like that great year where it's like, oh man, this is what this guy is capable of. He'd really never get to there ever again. He'd miss the entire 93-94 season. So, I guess good idea by the Pistons to not make this trade. Again, due to those issues, and his career never really gets back on track. He bounces around a bunch of different places. I think he ends his career in New Jersey or whatever, but never quite gets it all together. And, as far as this deal, it's a huge trade for both teams when you really look at it. Like, let's assume that Richard Dumas is over his substance abuse issues, and you're going to get the production you got from him in the Suns. And then imagine Dennis Rodman is still Dennis Rodman, still the great rebounder, great defender, all that sort of stuff. Like, that's a great trade. Like, that's the 62 win Phoenix Suns, in their playoff berth, the NBA Finals berth, I should say, the year prior. Richard Dumas was a key part of that. Like I said, a big, big part of that. But man, Rodman would have really added to that team a lot as well, because they did not have other than Barkley, of course, they didn't really have another really good, big man. You're relying on your Oliver Millers and your Mark Wests and those sort of guys who are fine players, but they're not Dennis Rodman. And you could really see Dennis Rodman potentially working well with those Suns. The problem, though, potentially, you bringing on Dennis Rodman, is that you have Charles Barkley and Dennis Rodman on the same team. And I don't know. I don't really know if I want to be the coach of a Dennis Rodman, Charles Barkley team. You?
Yeah, no, that's definitely a question that I would have. And, as you mentioned here, of course, Rodman does go to the Spurs. Mm-hmm. And the Spurs, regular season play pretty well. But eventually Rodman, ends up being, a personality that does not mix well with the Spurs locker room. They cast him out, after a couple years. You wonder how it would have been in Phoenix. They, of course, is he somebody who's going to mesh well with Paul Westphal? Is Paul Westphal going to put up with that? Are things going to be fine with Barkley? Yeah, I don't know. I could kind of go either way with Barkley, because Barkley's kind of a goof off too. Does somebody have to be we had The Last Dance, a lot of the focus on that is, them taking the risk and bringing in Rodman, and how, they had to be really careful with, having him fit the team, and he caused disruption sometimes, but obviously was an excellent player. Do the Suns have that kind of culture that they could have handled it? Yeah, maybe. It feels like they had leaders there, with Johnson and Barkley, and they might have had. I think the risk would have been worth the it would have been worth taking a chance there. you know, they were, you know, they made the Western Conference semis, lost in seven games to the Rockets. So obviously Rodman could have definitely made a difference there. And you know, like, you were giving up a potentially good young player, but obviously who did, barely played with them for the rest of the time. So they didn't lose anything. They didn't know they weren't losing anything, but yeah, it's definitely something that could have, you know, gone either way. Could have really, you know, burn the team like it kind of did the Spurs, or, you know, it could have been a really big success and, you know, they could have definitely been a championship contender and made the finals again for sure.
Yeah. It's fascinating to see where that would have went. And one thing I was unable to find in doing research for this is I couldn't find if the Suns knew that Dumas was in this aftercare program and just kind of said, "Hey, here you go, Pistons." And they were like, "Hey, what's going on with Richard Dumas?" They're like, "We don't know. We have no idea. Just sign the trade, call the trade in. Come on, do it. Cause like, I don't know. I couldn't find, like, it seems just weird that, like, you know, the Pistons would be like, "Hey, that guy that you're going to trade us, like, you know, he's in a program for his substance abuse issues. Is that, you know, we're not going to do the trade." Like, I couldn't find if that was something that kind of surprised everybody, or if it was just something that kind of came. So I'm not declaring malice on the end of the Suns. Like, they may have been just as surprised as the Pistons were. I just find it kind of interesting that, yeah, one of the key parts of the deal. And we don't have the exact deal laid in. We do know that Dumas was a part of it. We know that Rodman was a part of it. There was rumors that Joe Dumars was potentially involved as well, but it's impossible. We just know Dumas and Rodman were the key pieces, and then salary-wise, a bunch of other guys were going to get moved in and added or whatnot. But we do know is that eventually Detroit would trade Rodman to, like you said, San Antonio. He'd go there, get traded for Sean Elliott and a package of other players, and of course Sean Elliott would return 1 year later to the Spurs, and then, like you said, Rodman in San Antonio, he'd lead the NBA in rebounding 2 years, but they were kind of done with the Rodman experiment. And by the time they traded him to the Bulls, all they wanted back was Will Perdue. And of course, he'd go to the Bulls and he'd lead the NBA in rebounding 3 more times and then pick up 3 more titles along the way as well until his career spun into disarray on his own self with the Lakers and the Mavericks and whatever the hell he does today. So
sure. Next, we have Julius Erving. Rumors that he was going to be sent to the Clippers in June.
Can you even imagine? Can you even imagine what?
So there's an article about it from UPI Archives that basically they had the Clippers and Sixers had agreed to the trade, but the Sixers left it up to Erving, you know, the final approval of it, and Erving said absolutely not. But the idea was it would have been Erving and the Sixers' first-round pick. It was Leon Wood. So the Sixers had 2 first-round picks that year, one, of course, being Barkley, the other being Leon Wood, I think it was 11th overall. And it would have been for Terry Cummings and $1.5 million. So Terry Cummings was the 83 rookie of the year, still excellent after a second season. Excellent player, and who kind of wanted out of the Clippers, out of San Diego. I can't imagine why, but
the first and only player to ever feel uncomfortable playing for the Clippers. So yeah, believe it or not.
And the Sixers, you know, they fell off quite a bit in 84, you know, after winning the championship in 83. They went down from 65 wins to 52 wins. They were upset in the Nets in the first round of the playoff. It was interesting because I kind of looked at the key guys and, you know, the performance differences between 83 and 84. And Erving actually, you know, he was basically the same in 83 and 84. I mean, he was 34 years old at that point, but he was, you know, basically the same player. Really, the guy who fell off was Moses, who was yeah, I mean, still a good player, but was not nearly MVP level player anymore. And but you know, their defense, you know, basically stayed the same, you know, in terms of defensive rating in the league, but their offense slipped a lot. They went from 5th in offensive rating to 14th in offensive rating. So I thought that was, because you would kind of figure, okay, yeah, Erving got old, and you know, he kind of dipped. But Moses, you know, he was only 28, but he also had a lot of miles on him because, you know, obviously, you know, coming into the league from high school, so. He aged a little bit early, but anyway, the Clippers at that point were going from San Diego to Los Angeles, which is against the wishes of the NBA. We're looking for a big star to give them some credibility. And Irving and Cummings actually had fairly similar production for the next three years. Cummings was a bit better, but of course, you know, he had another decade plus in him. And, you know, kind of imagining a Sixers team with, you know, Cummings and Barkley and Cheeks and, you know, Tony, what was kind of left with him before injuries, and Malone. I mean, I would say they're still definitely an Eastern Conference powerhouse in the second half of the 80s, maybe even in the early 90s. What do you think?
Yeah, no, definitely. To me, the shock is just like, you know, trading Julius Erving a year after, you know, winning the title. Right. It seems like maybe the city of Philadelphia, usually like very logical and well, you know, well-mannered fan base, I'm sure would not get upset at that at all. But yeah, you're right. Like, it would be a tough sell to say, hey, we traded Julius Erving, you know, a year after we won the title, and everybody being like, what the fuck? What are you guys doing? But like, no, you're not wrong. Like, Terry Cummings and you know, the shock is just, oh my God, they're going to trade Julius Erving. But you really look at it, and Terry Cummings' production at that time, really, really good. Very similar to Erving, comes off a rookie of the year, 23 years old. Like, it's actually a really good trade. Like, it's a trade for the future. It's cashing out of, hey, this might be the end of the run. For us, you know, with this current unit, which is absolutely correct. They were absolutely right in that, is that was the highest of high that team was going to do. Yeah, you said, like, a Terry Cummings, Charles Barkley, Maurice Cheeks, you know, Andrew Toney, you know, that's a pretty damn good team. Definitely still a powerhouse, yeah. And I think definitely contends all throughout the rest of the 80s, and then, yeah, maybe even does a little bit in the 90s, as opposed to, you know, what ended up happening with the Sixers, which was not that. But, yeah, it's a real tough sell to the fan base, but, yeah, one that I think, had they, you know, done it and the success had come, which we kind of assume would have come, it could have been one that you could definitely say, hey, one of the all-time kind of ballsiest trades that a team made, but a real good one. But, yeah, of course, it does not happen, so...
Yeah, yeah, and the Sixers were better in 85 and 86. You know, they were still contending for, you know, the championship. Of course, by then the Celtics had surpassed them. But, you know, yeah, they even made a run with Irving. But, yeah, I think with Cummings, they definitely have a shot at being, you know, 55, 60-win teams. And I think the fan base forgives them if they, you know, if they're still in contention. But yeah, obviously, you know, that's a tough sell to selling Irving at that point. But, yeah, and then the Clippers end up trading Cummings later that offseason. It's September of 84. We get Cummings and Craig Hodges for Ricky Pierce to the Bucks for Junior Bridgman, Harvin Ketchings, Marcus Johnson, and cash. Marcus Johnson, former UCLA player, kind of becomes the credible star that the Clippers are looking for. You know, for the next couple of years, he still performs, you know, pretty much at an all-star level, but he suffers basically a career-ending back injury in 87. The Clippers, you know, still a mess, of course. Otherwise, in fact, in a year after the trade, they tried to reverse it after they discovered that Johnson had gone to rehab while still with Bucks. The NBA didn't go for that. And Cummings, yeah, he's got an all-NBA appearance in 85, a couple all-star appearances, and keeps the Bucks, you know, helps keep the Bucks relevant for the rest of the decade, you know, basically transitioning from, you know, an older team to a younger team. So exactly what it potentially could have done for the Sixers, it did for the Bucks.
Yeah, absolutely. It ended up working out pretty well for you know, obviously more for, you know, some other teams than others, but yeah, no, it ended up, you know, working out for both teams in some ways. But yeah, you do wonder again, yeah, what would have happened with the Sixers, but yeah, still worked and got away from, you know, the Clippers. So good for him. So,
yeah. And so a handful of other somewhat related trade attempts, rumors, kind of 84-ish. There's the owner of the Sixers, Harold Katz, had said in a book that he offered Irving to the Bulls for the number 3 pick, which eventually they would have chosen Michael Jordan. He said he thought he had a deal with the then Bulls owner just before Reinsdorf comes in to own the team, but the Bulls GM Rod Thorn ended up nixing it. So also some potential for trading Cummings for Jordan, because Cummings was a Chicago native. Mm-hmm. He went to DePaul. There's a report from the Chicago Tribune in June of 84 that the Bulls, Clippers, and Mavericks were working on a 3-way deal. I couldn't find the details, but, you know, the Bulls would have gotten Cummings, and the number 3 pick would have gone to the Clippers, who theoretically would have selected Jordan if the Blazers hadn't at number 2. And then also from the Jordan rules, the Clippers had offered any combination of 5 players or draft choices and exchange for Jordan after the 88 season. The Bulls apparently considered drafting Rick Smith and Mitch Richmond in that draft. And then in Hakeem Olajuwon's biography, he says that the Blazers offered Clyde Drexler and the number 2 overall pick, in which the Rockets would have chosen Michael Jordan for Ralph Sampson. I think that's one we're taking with a grain of salt, but it's there.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that one's those are all kind of wild. Yeah, and of course, in hindsight, and some of those wild even at the time, like the 88 one, the Clippers offering, you know, and the Bulls saying, Rick Smith and Rich Richmond. It's like, you know, I'd probably keep Michael Jordan. Just scored like 35 points a game. You know, I might want to just hit a lot of that guy. But some of those other ones are like the Irving to the Bulls one is always really fascinating to me. The one where, you know. Because again, you know, you don't know what you have in Michael Jordan. You don't know what you have in draft picks. And at those times, like, you know, GMs were really volatile with draft picks and with young players. And then you're like, oh, Julius Erving. All right, cool. Let's go. Like that one I could absolutely see happening. And thank God Rod Thorne was smart enough not to do it. But you can absolutely buy the Bulls brass being like, oh, great. Julius Erving, Dr. J coming to town. Who cares? Yeah, great. Like, you know, not knowing, you know, that, yeah, what you have in that number three pick. But those are all pretty interesting ones there.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the Bulls, move on to here to Scottie Pippen for Sean Kemp, July 1994. We've talked about this deal at length in prior episodes, the Last Dance episode. I think we've done an entire Scottie Pippen episode that we've talked about it. We have definitely talked about this trade three or four times, so I'm not going to go into huge details, as I'm sure most of you guys know about it. But we will recap it, though, because it is an important one here. So 1994, July 1994, this hit goes down. Of course, you know, we got to go a few years prior to really understand why this trade happens here. Pippen signs his contract extension at literally the worst possible time in NBA history, potentially, as he signs the deal. And then about a year later, the NBA money explodes, resulting in Pippen having one of the worst NBA contracts given his production. I mean, you look at the list of you know, guys per year money and like, you know, in like 94, he's like 80th, you know, in the league or whatever. And it's just absolutely nuts. But yeah, it all comes at a very terrible time for him to sign it right before the money explodes. And, you know, in The Last Dance, they talk about how a lot of people said, Scotty, I don't know if you want to sign this right now. And he, you know, rightfully so, said, hey, no, I'm, you know, I want to get my money right now. I want to move my mom out of her house. I want to, you know, do this sort of thing. He was supporting a family that had some issues. He had like a brother. Wasn't it a brother that was paralyzed? Am I remembering that correctly, or was it a brother or a cousin? It was some family member that was paralyzed.
Right. I forget offhand.
I forget if it was brother or father or something like that. But no, he and like, so to him, it's like, oh no, I want this money right now because there's a lot of things I need to do or want to do with this money. So totally justified at the time, but yeah, pretty quickly it results in one of the NBA's worst contracts. And that, you know, causes a lot of tension. And you know, what also causes tension is the departure of Michael Jordan from the Bulls. Pippen is now the de facto leader and the star. Again, that makes the contract issues more glaring when he's leading a team and a pretty good team. As well, even without Jordan, he's leading them to the playoffs and you know, making some decent runs. Tony Kukoc comes into the picture, and that doesn't help matters either because he's obviously paid significantly better than Scottie Pippen is. You also have the infamous game-winning Kukoc shot where Pippen refuses to check in. So there was a lot of tension going on with the Bulls and Scottie Pippen, and it seemed inevitable that at some point it was going to come to a head. In the 94 offseason, those that were here because the Bulls have a deal in place to send Pippen to Seattle for Seattle star Sean Kemp and veteran Ricky Pierce. Michael Jordan, who was a golf buddy of George Karl at the time, is noted and quoted as saying that Seattle would be getting a major star here, and they'd be getting definitely the better of the deal. As this deal's float around, the Seattle public does not agree. They vehemently protest the deal, and eventually Sixers owner Barry Ackerley nixes the deal, and it's off, and it does not happen. And you know, it all become moot again because Jordan's going to return to the Bulls midway through the 94-95 season. So they decide not to trade Scottie Pippen anymore, although it seems like every offseason, and we talked about this during The Last Dance and other episodes as well, it seemed like every offseason there was a deal again, or there was an idea that Scottie Pippen was going to get traded. But he ends up obviously finishing that Bulls run, winning three more titles with the Chicago Bulls. Michael Jordan comes back, all that sort of stuff. Yay, yay, yay. But interestingly enough, they won the titles, 1996 NBA Finals, does come in a win over the Seattle Supersonics. So yeah, gets us three more titles. But as we said, like, that wasn't the end of the rumored, you know, Scottie Pippen trades. Those would go many, many, many times throughout the years. 1995 trade deadline, the rumor Pippen goes to the Suns for Dan Marley, Wesley Person, and two first-round picks. Also, the Clippers apparently interested as well. Clippers always trying to get stars. The Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah.
So, nobody really wants to go there as free agents, so the only way to really get stars is to trade for them and force them to come to your team. 94 draft, there's also rumors that Pippen to the Raptors for the number 9 pick, which wound up being Tracy McGrady. Also, 97 draft. Yeah, oh, sorry, what was that?
Draft, yeah. You said 94, but 97
97 draft, yeah. Also, 97 draft, Pippen and Luke Longley to the Celtics for either the number three or number six overall picks or the number three overall pick and Antoine Walker as well. So, yeah, you can either get two first-round picks or the number three overall pick and Antoine Walker, some interesting ones there. Also, apparently rumors of Scottie Pippen to the Sixers for Jerry Stackhouse. Like we said, they were literally every single year trading Scottie Pippen for literally anybody they could possibly trade him for. And then finally... 1999, as everything's kind of crumbling here, Pippen to the Lakers for Eddie Jones and Eldon Campbell. But Jerry West, who, of course, is leading the Lakers at the time, says that that one wasn't that close either. So eventually he does get moved on to the Houston Rockets, sign and trade, and ends up, you know, there for a year. Then the Portland Trail Blazers, and then, you know, of course, back to the Bulls and all that sort of stuff with Scottie Pippen. And Sean Kemp, yeah, they Seattle did not want to trade Sean Kemp. The Seattle public did not want to trade Sean Kemp. The Barry Ackerley, the Suns owner, didn't want to trade Sean Kemp, and the Sonics owner. And eventually he does not trade him, and well, you know, the Cavs thing, and, you know, yada, 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 right. Sean Kemp. So sure. You know how that went. So I don't know. Yeah, a very interesting trade as you look at things. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure Kemp and Jordan win a title or two, right? Like, I don't, probably, like, probably. Like, Scottie Pippen's great, but like, Sean Kemp was great too for a lot of years. So it's like hard to believe that, you know, adding Jordan to, I mean, maybe there's chemistry issues that don't make it happen, but it's hard to not think that, you know, Sean Kemp and Michael Jordan get at least a few titles in there, right?
Yeah, maybe not three in a row. Although, you know, Pippen obviously was injured that last year, mm-hmm. and so Kemp probably would have been better that last year. The fit isn't quite as good. Obviously, you know, Kemp doesn't do all the, I mean, he's not as good of a defensive player. You know, he's not a guy who can, you know, really handle the ball as much, or is likely to do that anyway. So, I mean, I'd rather have Pippen, but I could see it working fine with Kemp and Jordan, and still, you know, they still would have been amazingly good. But yeah, I think it's less likely they would have won three championships in a row. I feel like something would have derailed them at least one of those years.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I'd probably rather have Pippen as well, but I do like the idea too of Sean Kemp just throwing down alley-oops all over the place. Yeah. Like, right. It sounds awesome. Like, yeah, I think they probably were better off not doing it, but yeah, the idea of Michael Jordan on a fast break just lobbing up a, you know, alley-oop to Sean Kemp sounds pretty sweet. And let me tell you, like, I don't know, what am I, 8 or 9 at this time? Like, 9-year-old me would have absolutely loved it. Like, I love Scottie Pippen, but god damn, having Sean Kemp in 1984 would have been awesome, because that dude was great. Like, posters everywhere. Let's go.
Yeah. So, next we go to June 1986, and rumors of a trade of James Worthy and Byron Scott to the Mavericks. They were going to send Mark Aguirre and the number 7 pick in the draft, which of course was Roy Tarpley of Michigan. It got to the point where Tarpley's agent was reluctant to allow him to come to Dallas for the press conference because he was certain that Tarpley was going to be traded to the Lakers. Maverick said, it didn't happen, or it's faked, or it's overblown, or whatever. Hard to say how close it came, but it definitely was reported at the time as being very close. At that point, you know, the Lakers in the 86 playoffs, they were upset by the young, you know, Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon Rockets in the 87 Western Conference Finals. Imagine if it had been Jordan Drexler and Olajuwon, it would have been even worse. perhaps they were looking at options for retooling. You know, the Mavericks were, you know, a little bit plucky and up and coming. They had taken the Lakers to 6 games in the conference semis. You know, they had 3 solid seasons in a row under Dick Motta. You know, pretty young core of Aguirre, Rolando Blackman, Sam Perkins, Brad Davis, Jay Vincent as well. And some guys on the bench that we'll talk about as well that, you know, also looked like they were going to be pretty stout. Aguirre was their best scorer. He averaged about 25 points on 55% true shooting over the past 3 seasons, would continue similar production, 87, 88, made the All-Star team both years. So now, you know, getting him instead, alongside Magic Johnson, maybe not necessarily – That might have worked okay, I think. He needs to get, you know, a little bit more ball movement, you know, less isolation scoring. But I think that would have been okay. He would have done what Worthy did defensively. But and then Tarpley, you know, was really a talented young big man. There were already rumors of drug use that were actually mentioned in the article originally, you know, when he was drafted. He actually started his career well enough, mm-hmm. made the all-rookie team his first year. Second year was 6th man of the year, but third year began having issues with injuries and then a series of DWI arrests and drug test failures that, you know, basically derailed his career. And then he was banned before the 1992 season after three mandatory drug tests.
Yeah, it's so on its face, again, one of these trades that sounds absolutely ludicrous. Like, you know, you're like, what, Roy Tarpley? Like, what are you doing? But like at the time, man, yeah, there was a lot of potential for him. And, you know, big, you know, young big man, a guy who, like you said, would, you know, wins rookie of the year. Does, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that you can look at with Roy Tarpley and think, you know, or maybe the all rookie team, not rookie of the year, but like, you know, a guy that like absolutely has all the potential in the world. And yeah, you absolutely see why the Lakers may have made the idea of saying, hey, you know what, let's do it. Let's, you know, retool, get younger, get better. And this is a franchise altering trade for both teams if it goes through. Cause I really do think the Mavericks, that would have been a great idea for them to get Worthy and Byron Scott. Tarpley, you know, maybe retools, like in a perfect world, retools the Lakers. But yeah, it's on its face, it's kind of like, oh my God, for Roy Tarpley, thank God they didn't do that. But yeah, in the moment at the time, it wasn't that wild. It's just, yeah, knowing where Tarpley's career was going to go and maybe being smart enough to look at some of the, you know, unfortunate signs that were already poking up before he had even gotten drafted. Yeah, it was the Lakers probably dodged a bullet here by not doing this.
Yeah. So, you know, the Lakers, meanwhile, you know, they end up, you know, there's obviously pressure for them to make a move after they lose in the playoffs, but they didn't panic there. They end up, you know, pretty much bringing back the team as is, and end up making a midseason trade to Blazers for Michael Thompson. And then, you know, of course, they in 87, they win the championship and win in 88 and you make four finals in 5 years with Thompson. So, you know, it goes well for them to not make a move. As you said, yeah, maybe they could have gotten one or two good years out of Tarpley and Aguirre and kind of been okay, but not likely they would have been that successful, obviously. And, it, you know, if unless, you know, they can keep Tarpley clean and, you know, have a productive career, but, you know, he's still going to have the injuries too. Mm-hmm. So unlikely that works out well for them. For the Mavs, you know, it's interesting. You know, they actually took a leap in 87 under John McLeod, who's a new coach. They go from 44 to 55 wins. They finish fourth in the league in SRS, but they actually end up were upset by the Sonics in the first round, which is the Dale Ellis revenge. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, would they have been better off with Worthy, who was only 25, and Scott, who was only 24, instead of Aguirre and Tarpley? And I'm sure, I think they would have been, but are they a title contender? It kind of depends on what level Worthy reaches as the number one option, because you've got Derek Harper, who's 25. You got Rolando Blackman, who's 27. Worthy and Perkins, who are 25. James Donaldson is 29. It's kind of the center is kind of the weak point there. The bench, you've got Detlef Schrempf, who's 24. You got Byron Scott, again, 24. Brad Davis, who's, you know, kind of the original Maverick from the expansion season, who's 31. Still okay, but, you know, definitely deep off the bench. Now, they had Al Wood, who was 28. If they'd have kept Dale Ellis instead of trading for him, obviously they're better off if they keep Ellis, who's young and is about to blow up as a scorer. And then, you know, like their center, you know, backup centers are Bill Wennington, who's 23, and UA Blob, who's 24. So, you know, obviously Wennington ends up having, you know, fairly solid career as a backup center, but that's obviously the, you know, the very weak point of their team.
Yeah, I think the one thing you mentioned there, I think, is the most important thing, is what does Worthy do as, like, the top guy? You know, and he never really had to be that in Los Angeles. Yeah, he was still a tremendous player and still a big part. But, yeah, there's no Magic Johnson on that team. You listed a lot of really good young players. None of them are Magic Johnson. And none of them are Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So that's really the key there, is if you think Worthy could have said, all right, cool, now the team is mine, I'm the top guy, like, whatever, I need to be the top scorer, I can do that. And I could definitely see Worthy doing that, but yeah, you do wonder if that may have been the stuff. Because, like, on its face, like, you look at that and you're like, well, yeah, that team's awesome, like, that team's great. But yeah, you do have to sort of bake in there, does Worthy, you know, take that leap and become a top guy? And even to a lesser extent, Byron Scott too is probably relied upon to be a little bit more of an all-around player than he was for the Lakers. So yeah, it's tough to say. It would have been a really fun trade. I would have liked to see that trade happen, because it would have been you have to imagine something changes in those late 80s and gets turned around there. But yeah, it's hard to say, you know, do the Lakers you know, who improves, who gets worse? Do both teams still improve? It's just, it's fascinating too that this trade's about to happen, is like these teams are still battling with one another. Cause then these guys are, I mean, there's no doubt that like these guys would have met in the playoffs a bunch of other times after that too. Right. That would have been really fun as well. And that's, you know, just a unique trade that doesn't happen very often, where like rivals will trade with each other. It's like, no. Cause like you don't want to be, you know, you don't want the Dale Ellis revenge series again. Like you're saying, you don't want James Worthy to be like, you traded my ass. No, I'm going to drop 30 on you guys and get you out of, you know, get out of these playoffs. Cause why did you trade me? Like, you know, that would have been really cool. Or, you know, Mark McGuire on the same standpoint being like, are you guys silly? Like, when you trade me to the Lakers with Magic and Kareem, like, you guys are nuts. I'm going to kill you. Or Roy Tarpley being like, come on, man, draft me number one. Like, why would you? So that would have been really awesome to see as well. But yeah, it ended up, of course, not happening. So,
yeah. So there was another potential Dallas trade at the beginning of 89 that I found, was the Celtics and Mavericks talking about Kevin McHale. Apparently, they reportedly offered Sam Perkins, Detlef Schrempf, and 2 first-round picks for McHale and Dennis Johnson. This is reported by Sam Smith. Both teams say the discussions merely reached the early stages before being cut off by Red Auerbach. But Dallas sources said they were encouraged because they'd asked about McHale many times before, and this was the first time Boston had not immediately said no.
So Red said, no, and they went, hey, you know what, that's not bad. Yeah. We got him to say,
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, they really should have. I mean, Boston should have absolutely made that trade, by the way, right?
Well, yeah. At that point, probably, yeah. I would say, yeah. I mean, McHale was still – okay, you know, had like 2 or 3 pretty good years left, but yeah, they definitely would have. Yeah, they definitely would have been a good trade to, especially the first round picks.
Yeah,
and Dennis Johnson was pretty much was done by then.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Right.
Yeah, I mean, he I think he was. You know, I think that was his last season. So, yeah, that definitely would have been a good trade. But you know,
he didn't immediately say no. Though. I love that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, next one here, Allen Iverson to the Pistons, August 2000. Iverson, of course, the first overall pick in the absolutely loaded 1996 NBA draft. And I should note here that Slam Magazine, that just did a special 1996 draft edition of their magazine, which I highly recommend. It is awesome. I have it, and I've been reading through it right now. Great pictures, great articles, really, really highly recommended. I think it's still available. I think if you just look up Slam Magazine 96, you can find it. But anyway, Iverson, instant sensation, becomes the Sixers' best player almost immediately. It didn't translate to winning right away, though. As the problem the Sixers had is, okay, we have Allen Iverson, and he's great, and he's good, and he scores, and he's fun, and he's interesting, and he's unique, and he's different. The problem is he doesn't really like passing or like working with other players, so it became an issue of several second options during Iverson's early years. You know, they go through Jerry Stackhouse and Larry Hughes, and eventually they decide on, all right, you know what, let's just get rid of all of our guys that need to score or hold the ball or do anything else, and just surround him with solid defenders and role players and those sort of guys. And let's get him a real coach. And they get NBA, you know, longtime NBA head coach Larry Brown. They surround him with guys like Aaron McKee and, you know, Eric Snow and those sort of guys. And it ends up working. Allen Iverson is named to the All-NBA first team, averages the league-leading 26.8 points per game. And the Sixers finally make the playoffs in the lockout shortened season. Then Iverson comes into the next offseason with a brand new deal, 6-year, $70 million extension. The Sixers once again make the playoffs. They win 49 games. Things are not that rosy, though, despite everything on the outside looking pretty good. Believe it or not, and this may come as a complete shock to you, Jason, but Larry Brown does not get along with Allen Iverson. I know. Larry Brown.
Next, you're going to tell me that he is interested in another coaching job.
Right. That while he was working for one team, that he might be looking at other teams to potentially leave. I know it is shocking that Larry Brown and a star don't see eye to eye, but I assure you, Jason, sources say that this is the case, that Larry Brown did not get along. I'm just saying, I'm just reporting. You decide. I report, you decide. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
So that's it with Larry Brown. So anyway, the Sixers are actively looking to trade Allen Iverson, and they actually have a deal in place, the infamous Allen Iverson to Detroit trade. Now, this is an interesting one for a lot of cases. You know, Detroit's kind of a, I wrote here, a struggling franchise at the time, and I don't know if they're necessarily struggling, but they're looking for an identity. They're trying to figure out what's going on. They, you know, they, they had a decent Grant Hill. I mean, Grant Hill comes up and he's drafted, and he's great off the bat, but he's not a generationally great player that many people probably expected him to be. He very quickly was anointed as like, oh, here's the next NBA star, here's the next Jordan. And Grant Hill was great. Like, don't get me wrong, Grant Hill was a very, very good player. He just wasn't that. You know, and he wasn't like a guy that's gonna, you know, you're gonna go, he's gonna put you on his back and you're gonna go to the NBA Finals because you have Grant Hill. He was not that. And, you know, they combine him with, you know, former Sixers, you know, second player, Jerry Stackhouse. That doesn't tick him over the hump. And then eventually things kind of all come crashing down in this offseason because Grant Hill is on his way to Orlando. He's got a big new contract, and I'm sure he's going to play a lot of games for the Orlando Magic in that new contract. I'm sure there can't be anything going wrong there, any problems there. So the Pistons, fearing that they're going to bottom out without Grant Hill, they decide that they need a star to replace him, and they look to Iverson. The Sixers, of course, are looking to rid themselves of Iverson. Detroit's looking for a star. It seemed like a perfect match. The proposal on the table, and there are a few ones, we'll talk about a few other ones as well, but the most prominent one that most people talk about is a pretty simple trade here. It is Allen Iverson and center Matt Geiger heading to Detroit for Jerry Stackhouse and Jerome Williams. The Lakers would also get involved as well. They do a sign-in trade with Glenn Rice. While the Pistons would then send Christian Laettner to the Lakers. And Glenn Rice would go to the Sixers, we should say there. So you have the Sixers trading Allen Iverson, acquiring Jerry Stackhouse, Jerome Junkyard Dog Williams, and Glenn Rice. Pistons are going to send Christian Laettner to the Lakers. And, of course, Detroit is going to get Allen Iverson. So there's some other ones as well. The one that I did see, which is actually an interesting trade as well, is Iverson and Geiger to Detroit, Jerry Stackhouse to Charlotte, Eddie Jones and Glenn Rice to Philadelphia, and then Tony Kukoc to the Lakers, which is a pretty interesting one as well. But it doesn't matter because one player out of all those guys I mentioned had the power to bring it all down. And that, of course, is Matt Geiger, who, of course, has a 15% trade kicker in his deal, a provision that he would have had to waive to make the transaction work under the salary cap. Matt Geiger at this time inexplicably had 4 seasons and $34 million remaining on his deal, which, I mean, Matt Geiger's a fine player, but gee, God almighty, that's a lot of money for Matt Geiger. They blame Kevin Garnett for this lockout happening when you're trading. You got Matt Geiger signed for 4 years and $34 million, and Kevin Garnett getting $100 million is the reason. Juwan Howard getting $100 million. That's why these players have made too much money, instead you're giving Matt Geiger that much. But anyway, he rightfully so refuses to waive that trade penalty. He goes, no, are you kidding me? Give me my money, man. This is a pretty interesting one here. A quote from Matt Geiger. He says, when it was first presented to me, it wasn't that big of a deal. I said no. Then it got interesting and they wanted to know my position, and I said no, because Matt Geiger wants his paper, which I don't blame you, man. Why would you do that? So he does not do it. He refuses to trade his kicker, and Geiger then the deal's off. It doesn't happen. And Allen Iverson stays with the Sixers. Sixers are set up for arguably their best season since the early 80s as Iverson wins the MVP, leads the Sixers to a miracle finals run as well. Things obviously don't go great after that and ends up kind of ending kind of poorly for the Sixers. But hey, they got the run, and Allen Iverson kind of became a Philadelphia sports legend after that as well. Detroit's, they fall into a brief disarray, but of course would win the title in 2004. And the Lakers would, instead of having Christian Laettner, they would settle for Horace Grant as their triangle offense linchpin, and they'd go on to win, you know, 2 more titles, obviously. Yeah. But all the quotes, it's very interesting to read these quotes because, you know, obviously the trade, you know, it's Detroit, it's obvious what they want. It's obvious what the Sixers want at this time. But then you have the Lakers getting involved, and they really want Christian Laettner for some reason. Like, many quotes are Phil Jackson's like, oh, he'd be perfect for the triangle. And it's like, I mean, I guess, but like, do you really need Christian Laettner? Is that really like the missing piece of this team? But they end up with Horace Grant, and it didn't matter because they have Kobe and Shaq, so it doesn't matter you know, the other guys are. It's like, you know, ah, man, how can we get one more guy? And it's like, you don't need anybody else. Just go. It's anybody. Anybody's fine. Right. Like,
yeah, I mean, obviously Kobe, Shaq, and Laettner. That's your
right. You know, you have your Shaquille O'Neal. Like, it doesn't matter who the third, right. the guy in the middle of the and it you know, whatever. Anyway.
All right. Fair enough.
So that's it. That's that. So Iverson does not go to Detroit. But he would eventually go to Detroit, of course. But
But not in a time that was relevant for anybody.
It's better if we just, you know, Allen Iverson retired with the Philadelphia 76ers and the Nuggets. He had the brief Nuggets run, and then he retired with the Nuggets. Sure. And I think that's all it ended. So
sounds right.
Grizzlies,
to me.
Get out of here. That never happened. So
I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit on your assessment of Christian Laettner. I mean, he did have like 4 All-NBA second teams and 1 All-NBA first team in his first 6 years. And like had a, like I'm looking at the, just, you know, like box score plus minus of like over 5 and, or almost 6, I think. And Like, he was pretty stout. I mean, you know, he wasn't like Jordan level stout, but I mean, he was.
That's a hot take. Are you sure you want? Are you sure you're gonna put that take down?
Yeah. But I mean, like, he was like roughly as good as, like, as, you know, Kobe was about to become. You know, I think it was the injury. I think he was. Yeah, I mean, he was like one of the two or three best shooting guards in the league, or forwards, or, you know, kind of between forward and shooting guard. You know, whatever he kind of played, he kind of played both. But anyway, so I don't know. I mean, but. Not really relevant to the overall arching discussion, but I'm going to go ahead and throw a little bit more of a. You're going to force me to endorse Duke
player. You know? Yeah, the one thing I will say is, though, like, a lot of that early stuff was like very early in his career, and things had started to kind of already. That first Detroit year, he's hurt and doesn't play all that much. But the second Detroit year, he's pretty solid. So I guess so. But yeah, again, it's another one in hindsight, because like his career would fall off immediately after that season, but you could absolutely see how the Lakers think that. And again, he fits into, like, you know, the template of a Phil Jackson triangle is like, just, you know, just get a dude in the middle and just get out of the way, because, you know, you don't really need, like, you know, I don't really need him. But I could buy Christian Laettner on the Lakers being a key piece. So that's fine. I will allow your Christian Laettner defense.
No, sorry. My defense was of Grant Hill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Christian Laettner.
I was a little confused.
I was really confused as well. I was like, did he make that many All-NBA teams? Okay, I am so sorry. There we go.
No, I mean, Christian Laettner was all right, but Grant Hill was like really, was like a legitimate superstar, you know, before going to Orlando and being injured. You know, was, I think, you know, was a, you know, was a top 10, maybe top five player in the league, you know, for a while. So I think he could have carried a championship team. You know, he could have been the best player in a championship team under the right circumstances.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I think a lot of it is the guys around him in Detroit obviously were not great.
Yeah,
on any level whatsoever. So I suppose that's right. Yeah, to me, I like I see disappointment in those first Grant Hill years, not because of his production, just because of like how well they played. But you're right. When, you know, your next best player is like, you know. Eric Montross and like old ass Joe, you know Theo Ratliff and like a comatose, you know, Joe Dumars and Lindsey Hunter. Yeah, you're probably right. I'm probably being a little tough on him. You know, Rick Mahorn. They're still like, hey, Rick Mahorn's here. It's like, okay, can we get, like, you know, we need real players that are, you know, playing in the league. Yeah, I could see that. And maybe not Doug Collins is also a thing too.
Maybe not.
Yeah, a better coach than Doug Collins is always a good option too. Right. So.
So next we have. A couple from 1992. First, Charles Barkley to the Lakers. This was reported on Philly.com, where there was a definite Charles Barkley for James Worthy trade. Although that one was apparently dead, there were indications the Sixers were still shopping him around. Apparently, the Magic Johnson called Barkley and asked him if he was interested in playing for the Lakers. Barkley said that he was. And then Magic indicated the deal was alive and that he would try to help get it done. That would have been, had Magic done so for the acting for the Lakers in an official capacity, the league would consider it tampering. No one ever got punished for it, at least not publicly. Later, Barkley would admit that he was told the trade had happened. Then he had some drinks with lunch, and then later was told the trade was off, and then had to play a little bit buzzed with the Sixers that night. But the trade apparently would have been Barkley and Ron Anderson to the Lakers for James Worthy and Elvin Campbell. And I mean, it's perhaps easy to forget just how awesome Barkley was, in the late 80s and the early 90s, and just how stellar was, and how he carried really remarkably mediocre Sixers teams to, you know, like in 1990, you know, they were 53 wins, sixth in the league in SRS, got into the second round, but they lost to the Bulls. But from 88 to 92, he averaged 26 points per game, 11.5 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.6 steals per game on 646 true shooting percentage, which comes despite being one of the worst 3-point shooters in NBA history. 7.7 box score plus minus, all NBA five times, really four times on the first team, and was second in MVP in 1990. So he was, you know, he was a monster. I think people know he was great, but maybe kind of how great he was at his peak, maybe not quite appreciated. But
it is, you know, weird. Not to kind of cut you off, but it is weird that, yeah, he's like really, really good at the Sixers. Right. But like, for some reason, he just doesn't get I don't know. He just doesn't get like that love that he deserves. Like everybody kind of knows he goes to Phoenix, and then it's like, oh yeah, then he was great in Phoenix, and then it's like people know that era. And maybe it's just because it's like the era of the NBA, and you know he's overshadowed by you know Bird and Jordan and you know the Lakers and all that sort of stuff. But it's like, dude, man, he's really good with the Sixers, and they're a damn good team too. So maybe all if he had made like one NBA Finals run, like maybe that changes the perception. But yeah, you don't hear a lot about the Sixers run with Barkley, and you hear more about the negatives and how he was annoying and they wanted to get rid of him and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, dude, yeah, maybe he was annoying, but like he's really goddamn good. So yeah, it is fascinating that you do not hear, to me at least, I don't hear that much about how great he was with the Sixers. But you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and they end up. I mean, and they fall off those next couple of years. You know, he's sick of them. They're sick of him. You know, getting Worthy and Campbell, probably not, you know, about as good of a haul. I mean, Worthy's still, you know, pretty good star, but he's definitely, you know, he's getting older, declining a bit. Campbell was just, you know, kind of there. He was an okay big man, but nothing particularly special. I mean, they end up, you know, trading him in the offseason in 92 to the Suns for Jeff Hornacek, Andrew Lang, and Tim Perry. The Sixers then traded Hornacek after a year and a half for Jeff Malone at the end of his career in a first round pick. So, you know, that haul wasn't anything great, but I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure it would have been much better or worse than what they did. Interesting for the Lakers because you've got Barkley, he's 28, so not old yet. Joining a low-level playoff team, you know, with a solid but a bit of an aging cast, Adele Threet, Sam Perkins, Byron Scott, Terry Teagle are kind of the key guys. And then only, you know, Vlade Divac, who's 23, AC Green, who's 27, were particularly young. But, I mean, the thing that is intriguing is whether – and this is just totally my speculation, but I'm going to go ahead and make it. It's our podcast. We can do this. Whether Barkley going to the Lakers entices Magic Johnson to change his mind about coming out of retirement. Because you remember he – of course, was, you know, with the dream team in the 92 Olympics, he decides he's going to come back to the NBA. He plays a bit in the preseason, and then other players, including Karl Malone, kind of are critical about him coming back, or you know, there's fears about HIV. And so Magic changes his mind, decides not to come back. But, you know, maybe, you know, okay, now the Lakers have another superstar I can play with. This is going to, you know, be a more fun, exciting challenge, a chance to win a championship. Maybe he comes back, and then I think that's a really interesting what if about how good the Lakers are, you know, with Barkley and Magic, if they can retool around a bit. You know, are they a title contender? You know, what kind of happens there? Because that's a really, I think, an interesting what if.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, I'm not sure. I love the trade for the Lakers, but yeah, it does it does present some issues as well. The Sixers, I don't love it for them, but obviously, you know, what ended up happening with Barkley probably isn't great either. So I guess it would have been better with Worthy and Campbell. It's I don't know. It is a tough. I think Worthy probably gives them a little bit more respectability going a little bit longer. Instead of the Jeff Hornacek, Andrew Lang, Tim Perry thing, which, you know, didn't go very well. But a lot of that is because of how the Sixers treated it. So I had, like, no faith in the Sixers at that time to actually, like, understand what the hell to do with anybody. So I guess they probably would have screwed it up, too. But, yeah, I do like it a lot for the Lakers, even though that team, you know, it's weird, though, because that team was kind of in flux and actually probably was better off that they kind of went down as much as they did, as quickly as they did, because they were able to kind of rebuild pretty quick as well. So I don't know. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating, but it's hard with the volatility of Charles Barkley. It's hard to ever, you know, kind of predict where he was going to go or what was going to happen with him. So
sure. Well, it's funny because, of course, the 93 Lakers, you know, kind of uninspiring bunch, end up giving the Suns, with Barkley in his MVP season, a scare by going up 2-0 in the first round before, you know, they end up losing in five games. So and also, you know, it's worth pondering, you know, if Barkley goes to the Lakers, how good are the 93 Suns without Barkley? Because 92, they were fourth in the league in SRS. They were nine wins better and were up to like third in the league in SRS in 93. So definitely better, but not like, you know, so much better. You know, they did lose some depth when, you know, they traded three rotation guys for Barkley. But, you know, they would still have had, you know, Hornacek, Kevin Johnson, Dan Majerle, you know, Tom Chambers, and, you know, pretty good crew on the bench. So, you know, maybe they try to find another option to get better. Like, hey, let's, maybe they try to trade for another unhappy star like Hakeem Olajuwon.
Right, right. Yeah. Which, do you want to take this one? I know you did some work on this one, so go ahead. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, this also leads to another unhappy star, Hakeem Olajuwon. He wasn't happy in Houston in September 92. His agent publicly told the press of Elijah Wan's desire to play elsewhere. During that season, he'd been suspended by the team for missing games with a hamstring injury that the doctors didn't think was severe enough to require that he sit out. Apparently, a couple of trades with the Heat discussed. One earlier in 92 was Elijah Wan for Glenn Rice, Steve Smith, and Ronnie Cicely, but that apparently was too much for the Heat. That was like basically the three best players. They were all really young. They thought that was too much. In retrospect, I think you definitely make that deal, but I at least sort of understand that a little bit from the Heat's perspective. But I think you would do that. A later trade offer was Elijah Wan and Sleepy Floyd for Cicely, Grant Long, and Harold Miner. Heat executive at the time, Billy Cunningham, said denied that the talks were ongoing. He said, we haven't spoken to those people in months. And, you know, we've talked about it a bit before, but I think it's crazy to see some of the things that were written about, in retrospect, to see what was written about Akeem. There's an Orlando Sentinel column. Elijah Wan has made it clear he wants out of Houston, and the Rockets have to be sick about his whining. Every year, it seems Elijah Wan is unhappy about something. He's currently moaning about his contract, which pays around $3 million per year. Even with Elijah Wan's enormous talents, the Rockets aren't a championship team, and they may choose to change the mix of their club by getting rid of him. And then another one in the Sun Sentinel, as for the Rockets, trading Elijah Wan rid them of a player who may have burned his bridges after 8 seasons as a team anchor. And then they talk about, you know, Cicely and Long and Minor, you know, adding depth to the team. But, you know, and obviously the Heat should have taken either Walker, either offer. I mean, if the Heat rejected that second one, that was one of the worst all-time bad moves.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Yeah. I'm guessing probably Houston said no to that one. Again, the first one, like, yeah, I could maybe talk myself. If I'm the Rockets, I could maybe talk myself into Glenn Rice, Steve Smith, and Ronnie Cicely. I mean, if you really think it's completely, you know, the relationship is unsalvageable.
Yeah, that one's okay. Like that one, I Glenn Rice and Steve Smith are great pieces. Ronnie Cicely at the time was really good. Yeah, you are out of your goddamn mind if you're getting Ronnie Cicely, Grant Long, and Harold Miner for Akeem Olajuwon. Like that, God, I hope that even if it was, if you were in that room, you just have to say like, no, we never, yeah, the Rockets, they definitely, yeah. Like that is, oh man, that NBA history. Yeah. Can you imagine the change that would have happened?
Well, yeah, the 93 Heat, you would have, like, let's assume that second trade, you know, went through.
Yeah.
The 93 Heat would have had Glenn Rice, who was 19 points per game and 38% three-point shooting. Steve Smith, 16 points per game. 5.5 assists, 40% three-point shooting. And you surround those guys with Elijah Wan, or surround Elijah Wan with those guys as shooters. That's just, you know, if they have any idea of how to play around, then that's an awesome, I mean, you know, you have to obviously add some depth, and they didn't have a lot of depth, but that's the potential of, that's definitely a championship core. I mean,
Yeah. That team is at least making an Eastern Conference Finals berth, or, you know, something's happening there for sure. That's a good ass team. But yeah, it is, you know, reading those quotes and we talk about it all the time, like the narrative around Hakeem Olajuwon, like people don't realize how bad it had gotten and how, you know, dire it was there in Houston. They were done with this guy and he was done with them, and it all kind of got, you know, Rudy comes in, they win two titles, and now it's like, hey, Houston Rockets legend, Hakeem Olajuwon. It's like, yeah, everybody was ready to get, I mean, they were done with him. Houston was done with him. They were annoyed of him. He was annoyed. It is so wild how different that narrative changed with those two titles. But, you know, titles will do that to you. So. All right. Well, speaking of big men here, let's move on to Tyson Chandler to the Thunder, February of 2009. Very interesting domino effect here as we kind of go through this of, you know, replacing Tyson Chandler with, you know, potentially, you know, Kendrick Perkins, or replacing Kendrick Perkins potentially with Tyson Chandler. But just to kind of give you this idea here, February 2009, this deal goes down at the, or supposedly goes down at the 2009 trade deadline in a pure salary dump. New Orleans is not in a good place at this point, but we'll get into that a little bit more detail when we talk about the Chris Paul trade. But anyway, New Orleans just wants the expiring contracts of Chris Wilcox and Joe Smith. And the Thunder are looking to grab in his prime Tyson Chandler, who had really in the last few years turned himself into one of the NBA's preeminent interior defenders, really kind of stripped down his game and got to the core of like, hey, let me just, you know, block people and shoot at the basket. The Bulls tried to make him a shooter. They tried to make him, you know, a guy who had range from 15 feet and all that sort of stuff. And the New Orleans Hornets just said, you know what, just Chris Paul's there. He'll throw you alley-oops, and then when the other guys come, you just block him, and he goes, okay, I'll do that. That's exactly what he did, and turned into a very, very good player there. And it's a great trade because the Thunder, I mean, still young as hell at this point, too. Like, quite literally, they'd only been the Thunder for, I think, a year or two at this point. The building blocks are there. The team wasn't great yet. But Russell Westbrook had a breakout sophomore year. Kevin Durant was emerging as one of the NBA's best scorers. And oh yeah, they had a really good rookie in James Harden. I mean, they were absolutely loaded. At this point, the team shocks everybody. They jump out to a 30-win first half of the season. As Durant, again, as I said, it kind of emerges and even better. Russell Westbrook's even better. And then this James Harden guy that comes in and he's almost immediately pretty decent as well. So they'd eventually win 50 games and they'd make the playoffs for the first time as the Thunder. They do that, of course, without Tyson Chandler, though, because the deal does not happen. Chandler had missed the previous 12 games for the Hornets due to a sprained left ankle. But that was not the reason why this trade didn't happen. It was his left big toe that would end the trade. Dr. Carlin Yates, the Oklahoma City team physician, determined that the risk of the re-injury of Chandler's left big toe was too great to give Chandler a clean bill of health. He therefore advised the Thunder to rescind the deal, and they did. Tyson Chandler goes, this is absolutely crazy. I'm super shocked. This is nuts. All right, let's get weird here. Tyson Chandler hurt that big toe April 2007 when the New Orleans Hornets were playing the Oklahoma City Thunder in Oklahoma City. And Jason, I want you to guess the doctor that performed the surgery on that left big toe.
Dr. Carlin Yates.
If you're saying Dr. Carlin Yates, you are correct. Dr. Carlin Yates was the man who did the trade. So, weird. Really, right. Really weird.
Yeah.
It's like, who did this? Guy, this yeah. Surgery is terrible. Like, who did this? You. Job. You must have re-injured it. I don't know.
Right.
Not great. Yeah. And the ripple effects of this one is not hard to figure out. The Thunder would of course hunt for interior presence for years until they finally land on Kendrick Perkins, who again Perkins was fine. He added a veteran presence to the team, but I mean the difference of Kendrick Perkins to Tyson Chandler is pretty large. There's no doubt that like Westbrook, Harden, Durant, and Tyson Chandler is a little bit better than Westbrook, Harden, and Durant and Kendrick Perkins. So. By 2011, like Chandler's arguably the second most important part, of the Dallas Mavericks team that goes on to win the finals, and the Thunder, they'd make finals the next year, but, of course, I've never win a title with the Westbrook Harden Durant core, but yeah, on its face, it's just like, oh Jesus, like the difference between Tyson Chandler, and Kendrick Perkins, I think would have been pretty obvious and pretty telling almost immediately as well. Not taking anything away from Kendrick Perkins whatsoever, but Chandler's just, I think fits into that team so much better than Kendrick Perkins did.
Yeah, and they wouldn't have had to give Jeff Green, which Jeff Green wasn't like, huge shakes or anything, but he was another like young guy. You could have maybe made a different deal for him and, not had to, Perkins again was just like, he was a fairly good, he was a solid player, but kind of dragged that team a little bit down in terms of like, didn't have the speed. Chandler was faster, as you said, was, better interior defender, just made more sense with that team and probably, they have a better chance at winning a championship with Chandler than they did, with the other way. And then of course, ended up breaking that team up later on. But yeah, that one is, again, Chandler not as big of a star as most of the guys that we talked about. But yeah, the ripple effect there, obviously, the Mavericks, if Chandler doesn't go to the Mavericks have a harder time winning the championship
sure.
in 2011. So, that's, obviously that's important as well.
Yeah, it's just great. I mean, yeah, that trade, I mean, New Orleans just literally saying, hey, just give us, Chris Wilcox and Joe Smith. We just want to get out of this contract situation.
Yeah.
I would have even told with this doctor, I'm like, let's figure it out anyway. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. Like,
yeah.
We'll figure out this left big toe issue. That's on OKC too. Yeah. Dr. Carlin Yates is saying, oh, this big toe. I mean, that's one thing, but even then I'd be like, I don't care. Like, let's try it. It's Chris Wilcox and Joe Smith. Like, who cares? And this was done. This trade was done. This isn't like, well, let's kind of talk about it. Rumored. It was like done. And then the physician said no. And then they said no. And then it didn't happen. It's like, oh my God, what are you doing? So, they were on the money. OKC was on the money for a lot of deals in that time, but that one, that one not so great.
Yeah. Well, nobody's perfect. Next, we have a couple from summer of 2007. You may remember the summer of 2007. There was discontent in the air in the NBA as Kevin Garnett was unhappy with the Minnesota Timberwolves and Kobe Bryant also unhappy with the Los Angeles Lakers. So lots of rumors of trades there. First with Garnett in June of 2007. things were very close, that there was a belief the Phoenix Suns were very likely to land Kevin Garnett. The Lakers themselves were also in attempting to acquire Garnett to keep Bryant happy. However, it appeared as though it was going to be the Suns. The rumored trade was the Suns getting Kevin Garnett, the Celtics getting Sean Marion, the Wolves getting the number 5 pick and some undisclosed players from the Suns and the Celtics, probably Al Jefferson being involved. Although the Celtics didn't really want to part with Al Jefferson unless they got KG, which of course, you know, was later what happened. But there's also a possible addition of the Hawks getting Amari Stoudemire and the Wolves getting the Hawks as number 3 and number 11 picks out of that. But the big stumbling block there was Marion not wanting really to play for the Celtics and not being willing to sign an extension with the Celtics. So yes, obviously ripple effects of that are pretty great. But imagine there being a Steve Nash, Kevin Garnett team together, like the smartest offensive player in NBA history, or at least of that time, and the smartest defensive player, you know, in NBA history, probably together on the, you know, on one team. Yeah, I mean, honestly, in retrospect, if the Suns had been willing to, you know, trade Amare and keep Marion, I mean, that totally, like, that would have been an awesome fit. That team would have been, like, just, you know, like, awesome on both ends and, you know, incredible. That team probably is, you know, they're getting a bit older, so that's the only issue there. But that's a team that really, you know, probably could have won a couple championships, you know, like 08 through 2011 timeframe.
Sure. Oh, no doubt. Yeah. You look at it, and Amari Stoudemire, obviously a tremendous player. And yeah, him and Nash on the pick and roll was just like unstoppable. Then you add, you know, Kevin Garnett, who can roll with the best of them and then also can, you know, can fade and pop and hit shots from the outside. It's just like, oh my God, like that would have just been just something else. And yeah, like you said, if you can keep Marion around there as well, I mean, just the upgrade from Amari to Kevin Garnett, not slighting Amari in any way, shape or form, but like it's Kevin Garnett, you know, he's just he's just a better player because there's not many people that are better than Kevin Garnett. So yeah, just sounds like an awesome trade. And I really, 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 really wish it would have happened, just because it just would have been fun to see. And then instead, you know, we just had kind of the aging, you know, Suns just kind of slowly fade away. And then, you know, the Celtics, of course, get, you know, KG and things go pretty well for them and all that sort of stuff. And then your Hawks would have gotten Amari Stoudemire. That would have been pretty fun, too. I like that part of the trade, too. So
that's true. But they wouldn't have gotten Al Horford, though. So,
yeah.
So probably better off getting Al Horford. Not as exciting, but better off overall getting Al Horford. But. But yeah, that would have been, I would have been happy at the time if they had gotten Amari Stoudemire for sure. So, and then the other big trade rumors surrounded Kobe Bryant a little bit later in the summer of 07, after, you know, the Lakers are not able to get KG. Kobe, you know, he requests trade publicly. It looks like he's leaving, you know, and it looked like it, you know, there was definitely report at the time, you know, heavily some chatter with the Bulls. The rumored trade was Bryant for Luol Deng, Tyrus Thomas, Ben Gordon, and Joakim Noah. This was reported by ESPN.com in the fall of 07. Bryant had a no trade clause, though apparently the only person in the league at the time with a no trade clause, and wanted Deng to remain on the Bulls. I mean, the Bulls, you know, if the trade had gone through, they would have had Kobe, Ben Wallace, who was 33, Kirk Heinrich, Chris Duhon, Andres Nocioni, Joe Smith, and Thabo Sefolosha. So, you know, some good role players there, but, you know, that's definitely a team that was worse than the Lakers, who at least had, you know, Andrew Bynum and Lamar Odom, and a much better coach. So, he didn't want to get out of Los Angeles that bad, apparently. So, and then the Pistons trade, which I think is interesting, and this one I guess was reported at the time, but I don't think I was ever aware of the details of it. But the Detroit radio station apparently reported it would have been Rip Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince, Amir Johnson, and a first round pick. And Amir Johnson was, like, you know, kind of like a potentially good young player at the time. And Brian said again he uses no trade clause to kill the deal. I don't really like that one for the Lakers, but for the Pistons, I mean, you know, you still have Kobe, Chauncey Billups, Rasheed Wallace, yeah, Antonio Nice. And then, some decent young bench pieces there. Not like terrific depth, but I think that that's a team that could, match up with the Cavs and with the Celtics and maybe have gone to the finals.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm right with you. I'm right with you on both those trades, to be honest. Yeah, the Bulls one is one that always, even at the time, it was just like, yeah, that's a lot to give up for, Kobe Bryant. And it wasn't because people didn't think that Kobe Bryant was great. He was obviously great, but it's like, that's a lot of your team. Luol Deng and Ben Gorin and eventually what Joakim Noah was going to be, and even Tyrus Thomas, who was really good at that time. I mean, that's your depth. And yeah, you look at the team that's left, and it's like, this is just Kobe on the same team as the Lakers, just in the East. It's like, yeah,
right.
Maybe he does a little bit better because it's the East, but yeah, Ben Wallace, Kirk Heinrich, Duhon, Nocioni, Joseph. I mean, it's not great. It's not a real good team. But yeah, that Pistons team, I like that team a lot. The Kobe, Chauncey, Rasheed Wallace, Antonio McDyess, like that all that works. I mean, that you could see it on the floor. You could see how it works in practice as well. Like you can absolutely see how that yeah. No, are they like a no doubt title contender? I don't know if I put them there, but I think they're definitely in the mix. I think at least for a year or two, they're in the mix there before, Wallace obviously starts getting a little bit older and Billups, starts kind of, fading out as well. And Antonio McDyess kind of fades out. But yeah, you could absolutely see that team making a little bit of a run, especially in the Eastern Conference where, it wasn't great, any real great shakes at that time too. So yeah, that would have been a really cool trade to see happen. But as you said, he didn't want to leave LA that bad because he nixed a lot of trades
right
along the way. So
he did. Yeah. And then the Lakers, of course, got Pau Gasol, and then, they lived happily ever after. So.
Yeah, and that perfectly leads into our final deal here. Chris Paul to the Lakers. Maybe not happily ever after, because they also kind of wanted Chris Paul too. So this is, when we're talking about today's NBA and how weird everything is and the abbreviated offseason, this is perfect when to finish here, because this is a tumultuous 2 months tumultuous few months in the NBA, as the trade is set to go down the day before the formal reopening of the league after a 5-month lockout. So it's actually around the same time, December 8th, 2011 is when this all goes down. So first off, the trade, as we kind of get through all the intricacies of it or and all that sort of stuff. So, okay, proposed trade is going to send Chris Paul to the Lakers, Pau Gasol to the Rockets, and Kevin Martin, Luis Scola, Lamar Odom, Goran Dragic, and a 2012 first-round pick that Houston had acquired from the Knicks, and all those guys are going to go to New Orleans. So a real fun, interesting deal here. Paul at the time, a former Rookie of the Year, one-time All-NBA first team, twice top five MVP, four-time NBA All-Star, twice led the league in assists and steals, arguably the NBA's top point guard at age 25, except for, and a note here, do you remember the Darren Williams versus Chris Paul debates? I mean, those are just, and people, like, yeah. You're going to laugh, like, there's a young listener that's laughing. I promise you, they were legit, and I promise you, there were people that argued both sides, and I promise you, there was cases to be made for both sides. It is so ridiculous in hindsight now. I was always on the Chris Paul side, for the record. I was always on the right side, but the Darren Williams, it wasn't that ridiculous. Like, now it seems so laughable, but at the time, it wasn't that ridiculous. I promise it wasn't that ridiculous. Right, like it wasn't that ridiculous.
No, right. You could make a case. It wasn't a good case, but a case could be made that wasn't insane.
You didn't get laughed out of the room. Like
right,
now, you'd get laughed out of the room. But
yeah, he was bigger. He was taller. He could do some things that Chris Paul couldn't do. There was some playoff numbers that kind of favored Darren Williams a little bit, but not that much.
No, and then like a year or two after, it was like, oh yeah, it's like, why did we all? Like, and then everybody was like, why did we have that debate? We're so dumb. Of course, it's Chris Paul, but that's what happened at that time. Anyway, New Orleans had built a decentish team around Paul. They made a run to the Western Conference Finals in 07-08, arguably Paul's best year, one of the great years in NBA history. Chris Paul in 07-08. In the years that followed, though, the team struggled to make a deep run into the playoffs, and Chris Paul realizing that this thing isn't really going to go anywhere, he informs the Hornets and GM Dell Demps just days before this proposed trade that he is not going to sign a contract extension and that he would become a free agent July 1st, 2012. So they look at that and go, hey, look, let's get some value out of this guy while we can. As far as the Lakers, they were obviously eager to add a top five, top 10 player to their roster. They're fresh off back-to-back titles in 09 and 010, or in 10. Lakers did fall down to earth in 2011, though, an embarrassing Western Conference Finals loss to the eventual champion Dallas Mavericks. They were not looking to retool, but reload, and Paul was really their big target there. What's interesting, though, and I did note this, and kind of gets lost in this deal, is that the deal is they're going to lose Pau Gasol in this deal. They're going to trade him to Houston, and people kind of go, oh, yeah, whatever, yeah, Chris Paul to the Lakers, oh, yeah, let's go. Like, Pau Gasol was the top win share guy for the Lakers the prior 3 years, and he'd be the top win share guy this next year as he stayed with the team. Like, let's not forget. I know it's very easy to forget how good Pau Gasol was and how important he was to those teams. And you mentioned a little bit there. He was one of the. I mean, yes, Kobe Bryant is Kobe Bryant. Yes, I know. That team doesn't win titles without Pau Gasol. And
yeah, for sure.
People
yeah.
just very instantly are like, yeah, whatever. No, Chris Paul. It's like, all right, now hold on a minute. Like, you're losing Pau Gasol. And that's a big, big thing. That's a huge thing for the Lakers at that time. And I hate that people just kind of, he comes to the team and it's like, oh, yeah, well, now Kobe has his second guy and he's ready to go. And it's like, no, Pau Gasol was like every bit as good as Kobe Bryant or better than Kobe Bryant was for those title teams. So don't whitewash Pau Gasol. Like, let's give him some respect for what he did on those teams. I mean, look at the numbers. They're there. They're absolutely there.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I would say it's close. I would give Kobe a bit of the edge, but I mean, Gasol was excellent, and he was right there, and is a little bit under appreciated, I think, for how good he really was, and how instantly you know that team turned around because of him. By this point, he'd aged a bit, wasn't quite as strong. I mean, I think it obviously would definitely do that deal, but it wasn't like he was irreplaceable. They were giving up a lot to get Chris Paul. I mean, I think it would have been worth it, but it definitely, you know, they were going to have to, you know, get some good supporting pieces as well for them to, you know, be a championship contender.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. No doubt. And like, yeah, it's like if they had not had to trade Pau Gasol, it's like, oh, obvious. Like, dude, yeah, make this trade 1,000 times again. And then, yeah, then the NBA is ruined for, you know, another decade if it's Kobe, Gasol, and, you know, Chris Paul all together. But obviously, it doesn't happen. But anyway, Houston, at this time, and they're trying to get Pau Gasol in this deal, a decent middle of the road Western Conference team. They're really struggling for an identity, though. Post Yao and McGrady, and obviously this trade falling through doesn't affect them that much, as they use, you know, a lot of the pieces that we mentioned above. They'd use a lot of those pieces to acquire James Harden 2 seasons later, so ended up working pretty well for them. But let's get to the drama and the fun stuff of why this trade falls through. So first off, this doesn't happen at all. This trade doesn't get vetoed. Nothing really happens here if in 2010 the NBA doesn't buy the New Orleans Hornets from terrible NBA owner, repugnant owner George Shin. And for those that don't know, real quickly here, Shin was accused of kidnapping and sexually assaulting a woman in Charlotte in 1999. Not great. This effectively ends the Hornets' run in Charlotte, as the community basically says, well, we really don't want to, you know, support this guy who kidnapped and sexually assaulted a woman in our town. And that ends up kind of ending the Hornets in Charlotte. They, of course, will move to New Orleans, but they're still under financial strain because George Shin is a terrible human being, and a lot of his money is kind of drying up at this point. So finally, the NBA steps in and does Shin a solid by buying the team for $300 million. So not bad. Not a bad return on investment for a terrible, terrible human being. So yay. This gives the NBA pseudo power over the Hornets, though they never really used it until this point here, as David Stern informs the Hornets that they could not make the trade. The big question still to this day that people, I think, don't know, was this Stern acting on his own accord, just kind of saying, hey, look, nah, it's not a great trade, or I don't really want this to happen? Or did the NBA owners, you know, 29 of them, pretty sick of the Lakers' dominance over the last decade plus, did they demand that Stern stop it? Mike Bass, who was the NBA spokesman at the time, says it's not true that the owners killed the deal. The deal was never discussed at the Board of Governors meeting, and the league office declined to make the trade for basketball reasons. Okay, sounds good. NBA, some other sources don't necessarily agree here. Yahoo Sports gets an email sent to them from, or you know, sent to them, you know, it's Cleveland Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert sends this email to David Stern. Yahoo gets it here. This email says that this deal is a travesty, and says Stern should put the deal to a vote of the 29 owners of the New Orleans Hornets. So I don't know who you believe. I guess, do you believe Dan Gilbert or Mike Bass? I don't know. It's kind of a Sophie's choice here. It's David Stern, sure. Mike Bass, and Dan Gilbert. So decide who's lying in this case. So,
yes, probably everyone's
probably
lying.
All three. Yes, is probably the correct answer there.
Yes.
So, yeah, anyway, this ends up being a complete disaster on many levels. When the deal falls through, David Stern says the deal is not going to happen. And then you have a lot of issues here. So you have the Hornets have a disgruntled star that doesn't want to be there anymore. Eventually, of course, they would trade him to the Los Angeles Clippers, not the Lakers. There's more ramifications, though, because Lamar Odom, upon realizing that he's in these trade talks, he says, well, I'm not going back to the Lakers. You guys don't want me. You just tried to trade me. And this is always what happens in these deals that fall through. It's very hard to be like, all right, hey, welcome back. Yeah, no, we didn't really want to trade you. It's like, yeah, you did. You did, and the deal got nixed, and you don't want me, and that I don't really want to play for you. So, of course, Lamar Odom, then a few days later, is traded to the Dallas Mavericks, and, of course, that does not go well, and his personal life kind of falls into disarray as well. But that is kind of one of the big, you know, things that happen here. But the ripple effect is pretty large. The Clippers become a real team. New Orleans Hornets, you know, they are still bad and I guess a little bit better than, I don't know. The deal they would have gotten was pretty cool as well. And this one they got, you know, Al Farouk Aminu, Eric Gordon, Chris Kamen. I don't know. That's not great.
Yeah. Either. I mean, they got some picks out of it. I mean, it maybe was more beneficial to help them rebuild, but they would have gotten better talent for the other trade. It depends on where, you know, where you think they're going to kind of go, you know, like if you want to rebuild and the second deal was better because you had better pieces for rebuilding, the other team, you're still kind of expensive. You're better, but you're still kind of mediocre. So, you know, it's hard to say.
Yeah, it is. It's strange. But yeah, the ripple effects are, of course, the Lakers then kind of fall apart after this, losing Lamar Odom, basically have to trade him for next to nothing. And then they decide to empty the bank a few years later for Dwight Howard and Steve Nash. And we were told it was going to be fun, and it was
not fun.
It was not very fun at all. It was kind of not fun. It was kind of the opposite of fun. It was very depressing and not fun at all. So, yeah, it ends up going on. And then, yeah, so a lot of happens there to kind of work it out. But, yeah, one of the more famous, you know, blocked or declined or whatever NBA deals in history there with Chris Paul not going to the Lakers.
Well, speaking of the opposite of fun, Paul George. He was almost traded to the Cavaliers in June 2017. This was the summer after the Cavs had lost the 2017 finals to the Warriors, Kevin Durant's first season with the Warriors. General manager David Griffin, his contract was not renewed, so he left the team toward the end of June. But there was going to be a trade that on June 30th that would have sent George to the Cavs, Kevin Love to the Nuggets, and Gary Harris, the number 13, and perhaps some other pieces to the Pacers. There's a ESPN.com article going into that and other things involving Kyrie Irving that we'll get into in a second. But on that afternoon, the sides all thought they had a deal. Everyone tentatively agreed. They had done. They were setting up to arrange a call between Paul George and Dan Gilbert. And, you know, everyone thought that, you know, that was going to happen. But then Pritchard, the Indianapolis GM, Kevin Pritchard, he was on the conference call when it was agreed to, sent the team message that they were backing out and that there was no deal. George then traded to the Thunder the next day. And just a few days later, Kyrie Irving requests a trade in July. So, very, very dramatic change for the Cavs in just a little bit, a period of time. Irving ends up getting traded in August to the Celtics in 2017. The Cavs, what looks kind of like an okay deal at the time. You know, they got Isaiah Thomas, who'd been really good the year before, but I don't think it was clear how, you know, injured, how the injuries were going to affect him again. They got Jay Crowder, who people thought would be a pretty good fit. They got, you know, Brooklyn's draft pick, which, you know, potentially was going to be great. So, you know, they were okay. But, yeah, not having Paul George, you know, I think getting – I'm not, in the big picture, I'm not sure how much really changes here. You know, assuming everything else happens the same, I think George gives the Cavs a slightly better chance at the 2018 finals than, you know, they had with Kevin Love. You know, basically it was all of LeBron's willpower they had just to get them there. But they probably don't have a good chance of, you know, giving the Warriors a fight.
Yeah, you have to assume that no matter what happens, Kyrie is out of there. And that's right. The big difference. It's like if you want to say that, hey, Paul George comes to Kyrie's like, all right, I'm in. Like, I love this. This team's great. I love, you know, I love playing for LeBron James. I love everything that's happening here. Like, if that happens, then yeah, it's a no doubt. Like, oh my God, what a great trade that would have been. And of course, yeah, right. You can look at the Cavs and say, shit, they maybe win that title. Maybe they beat the Warriors or they give them a run for their money because Paul George is great still at this time. Yeah, assuming that Kyrie is out of there, it's just like, yeah, it's just putting a little bit of a Band-Aid on a team. And, yeah, the result is probably the same. They probably still get destroyed by the Warriors. in the NBA Finals, regardless if it's Kevin Love or Paul George. And yeah, it's maybe they give a little bit more of a chance. Maybe they win a game as opposed to, you know, no games. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, assuming that Kyrie is out of there, I think this is just kind of moving deck chairs on the Titanic. So
yeah, right. I mean, and I think, you know, Kyrie's big. It seems like his big, you know, bone of contention is he didn't want to be second fiddle to LeBron James anymore.
Right, so being third fiddle is probably not
going to be any better. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the only – if by getting George you convince LeBron to stay, then obviously that makes a big deal. But it seems like LeBron, you know, his interest in going to the Lakers was more than just basketball reasons. I mean, you know, family and, you know, being able to do entertainment projects and that kind of stuff, which, you know, Paul George isn't going to make a difference there. So, and they might have lost George after the next season. So, you know, it wasn't going to, again, not a huge difference, but I guess it would have been interesting to see, you know, how they would have played together for a year.
Yeah, it would have been just fun, at least, you know, other than the depressing, you know, slog that was the, you know, the final Cavs season with LeBron.
Right.
It would have been at least a little bit of an exciting slog to the end where, you know, they still probably lose. But hey,
Well, I mean, LeBron was just awesome in those playoffs, you know, that game-winning shot against the Pacers.
Yeah.
And I mean that was a lot of fun. Obviously, that would have been different if George had been there. I mean, they still probably would have made the finals, but I don't know. Obviously a notable recent one that I thought was deserving of attention, but yeah, not a great counterfactual there. I don't think it changes that much for the Pacers either, you know, or, you know, I guess the Nuggets getting Kevin Love is interesting. You know, how does that affect the Nuggets now? Does Jokic have the same opportunity? You know, how does that all work together?
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Actually the ripple effect that I like the most is there. It's just kind of like, oh, weird. Yeah, that
right.
Team is way different than they are today. Because, yeah, Jokic doesn't really get that. Yeah, they're just not at all what they are today. And they're kind of stuck with Kevin Love for a lot of years, potentially. Because, you know, you'd probably sign him, too. You'd probably sign him with a very similar extension, too, because you don't want to just trade for him and then, you know, let him go immediately after that. So, yeah, it's that. Oh, yeah, that would have been wild.
Yeah. I mean, Jokic and Love probably could play together okay, but it might not necessarily be the ideal fit. And the Nuggets probably don't get Millsap. And, yeah, just a lot of interesting things there. So. But, I think that's all we have.
I think that's it. So those are some trades. If you have any others as well, there were some people that sent us some interesting ones as well. If there's any we missed or any ones that we didn't talk about, please let us know as well. At Overback NBA, Overback NBA on Facebook as well would be much appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah. Facebook, Twitter, wherever you want to contact us. Also, if you like what you're listening to, you want to give us a rating and review on the podcast provider of your choice. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, pretty much any service that exists. We are there. If you want us to be there and we're not there, let us know and we will add ourselves to it if that's possible. But yeah, thanks everyone for listening and we'll be back again soon.